This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm thrilled today to have Dr. Imelda Deconis with us. Dr. Deconis is the president and CEO of Northwest Permanente, a large part of Kaiser Permanente, and thrilled to visit with her today about quality and more and so on. Dr. Deconis, can you take a moment and introduce yourself?
Thanks, Scott. So as you said, I'm the CEO and president of Northwest Permanente in KP Northwest. We are the medical group that serves our members and patients in Oregon as well as Southwest Washington. I have been an internist at Northwest Perm 21 years this August, and internist by background and training, hospitalist for at least 12 years prior to taking on this role almost 5 years ago.
Take a moment and talk about quality and Kaiser Permanente. If you went back 25 years ago, Kaiser Permanente sort of did average in terms of quality scores and so forth. Then over the last 20, 25 years, it's become sort of a beacon of quality nationally. It became better and better at recruiting, training the very best physicians throughout the country. There were certain aha moments in my own journey to understand sort of how good Kaiser had become. But you've been there. Talk about the improvement in quality of Kaiser Permanente and Northwest Permanente over the last couple decades.
Wow. So we celebrate our 75th year this year in 2020. And to your point, what a great way to celebrate it and having been on this journey of improved value and quality for our care. And I have to say, it starts with the people. So to your point, in terms of recruiting the best talent, our physicians and clinicians in the program, and starting with the people, then innovating, iterating the model of care, backed by a very robust infrastructure. And in that is analytics. Right? Because what you measure, you follow, you improve, and you learn from that. So with the physician groups, and we have 8 Permanente medical groups across the program, it really became mission critical that we had the right talent creating the set of analytics that we would measure, whether it's in the ambulatory care or hospital arena, focusing in on access, care experience, and not just what's in the HEDIS measures, for example. And then from that, having robust analytics, both within the Kaiser Foundation Health Plan and hospitals, as well as in the Permanente medical groups, all the way down to the clinicians. At the clinician level, we know how well you control blood pressure, diabetes, what complications of diabetes are we tracking? How are we moving that upstream into the preventive sphere? So in that, with Epic, then building the analytics within Epic to give that intel on how we're doing at the practice level, and creating from a population health perspective, what we call the patient support tool, and from that, at the individual patient, the collective performance of how we're doing and managing the population. So an example, when you come in today, I can look at your patient support tool information, and I can see what immunization you need, what cancer screening you're due for based on your, you know, your age, sex, obviously, and demographics, and how do we close that gap. Everybody leans in, not just your physician and clinician at the moment, but the nurses reach out to you at home. Our medical assistants with every visit and certainly in their outreach calls will say, you know, you are due to come in. We will text you for that. Colon cancer screening, cervical cancer screening, immunization. You can check in for an x-ray, even for your dental appointment in the Northwest. And everybody is in the care team leaning in, looking at this and saying, we need you to have this immunization today or your screening for today. So it's the care team along with the physicians really owning the individual patient care as well as then the population benefits.
One of the things that I found fascinating about the Kaiser situation was it probably goes back 10, 15 years ago that they significantly raised above market or a little bit above market the pay of primary care physicians, internists, and so forth was my perception. It became culturally and economically a destination for great internists and great primary care physicians. How important was strengthening that level of care to sending a message throughout Kaiser that we're going to be a great value care and care providing organization?
Well, it's all the, you know, support and really the model. So coming in as an internist 21 years ago, you have the sense, number one, that you have autonomy in the sense that you can do the best for the patient. It's incentivized because it's prepaid, because, you know, I get paid a salary. My incentive is not to even think about the business of medicine, really. It takes that off of my plate and really focus on the patient. And then in the electronic health record, in the care team, there are tools that always tell me if I'm prescribing you an antibiotic, for example. There are alerts that physicians have built into the electronic health record of, you know, dosing it for your kidney function. So I don't have to, you know, it's just all built in, and it makes you, it helps you do the right thing every touch, every time. So the quote, the business of medicine is really not in it. I mean, you can really come in, practice full time as a clinician and focus on evidence, and the evidence is built into the electronic health record. The intelligence is built into the electronic health record by physician teams. And so it's really the computer working for you as opposed to you working for the computer. So the incentive also is that because you have data for your practice as a primary care physician from, you know, how well you're performing on managing your patients who have diabetes, high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, evidence behind if I wanted it, you know, if I was thinking of an MRI for a patient, again, the intelligence is built by physicians in the electronic health record to support. It's all these decision-making tools. So as the knowledge in medicine has exploded, you have all those tools at your disposal to practice evidence-based medicine, really. And so I think all of that support structure, the prepaid salary model, all of that supports what you've always wanted to in medicine, which is with the patient in front of you doing what makes sense for that patient.
Fantastic. Take a moment and talk about your journey to leadership. You now run a very important organization. Talk about your journey to leadership.
Oh, God. I'm embarrassed to share my leadership journey stories with people because it's nothing was planned. There was no strategy. I joined Northwest Perm thinking that I would be a full-time physician until I retired. And I distinctly recall moving from University of Chicago, where I trained, to the West Coast thinking, I just want to practice medicine. I don't want to deal with, you know, the business of medicine. I just want to take care of patients. And that's what I've done. And that's what I did. And my first leadership role, I must have said at least no five times to my chief, who called me. I distinctly recall unpacking groceries, having been post-call, night call at the hospital, and him telling me, asking me that I be the lead for the hospitalist. And I said, no, made up excuses. I couldn't even see myself in that role. So fast forward into either becoming the lead physician for planning our Kaiser Westside Hospital, or the becoming the chief of staff or chief medical officer for the region, or the every step along the way, I was asked, cajoled, arm twisted to get into these roles, and even this role, frankly. So I know that's not a very exciting or interesting story, but it's reluctant leader, I guess, is a term that's often used to describe my journey as a leader. But I always knew that it's the impact. I'm told it's the impact, and really, you know, when you believe in the mission of providing quality and affordable healthcare services and improving the health of the communities we serve, that's my North Star, and why I've stayed in KP, frankly.
And take a moment then, as a reluctant leader, how do you sort of set priorities and then actually take the helm of leadership? How do you then approach it? I mean, you obviously had this great professional career. You were a University of Chicago alum. I mean, you had great success. How do you then embrace leadership when not really the ambition to drive into leadership, but then taking it on? How do you embrace it then?
I love the people, and that's true of my patients and the teams. And you spend so much more time oftentimes at work than you do at home. And so truly the work family is core. And in serving our patients and our teams, you know, I start with the culture, and that just gets my creative juices and my energy flowing. So it's not so much the role, it's not the role itself. It's just the fact that this is what needs to be done. And then it's in the working with our people, with our patients, as simple as, and maybe it's not simple, when we were building and thinking about Kaiser Westside Hospital, part of my interview, I talked about a vision for a culture there. And one of the panelists, you know, when I debriefed with her later on, you know, what made you guys hire me for this? Because I didn't really have any regional leadership background. And she said I was the only one who mentioned culture. So for me, how I embrace leadership is that I begin with the culture. From culture, then, it, no matter how the vision is, unless you have the culture as your foundation of how the teams are going to work together to serve the greater good, it's hard to knit that together. So how I embrace leadership is I just start with culture, and there's always a vision with that. But ultimately, then the rest of the work is integrating both the culture and the vision to knit it together.
Thank you. And take a moment on another subject. Kaiser Permanente had one of the most iconic leaders in healthcare for a long time, Bernard Tyson. Take one moment on Bernard Tyson's leadership style and Bernard Tyson.
BT, as I called him whenever I saw him, and I stole a phrase from him. You know, I would ask him, hey, how you doing, BT? And he'd say, living the dream, Malda, living the dream. And so now when folks ask me, I would sometimes use that phrase. And that says it all. You know, he was a bundle of energy and so approachable. And I think that's why no matter the audience, whether it's KP or non-KP, inside, outside, I believe the audience, the people just gravitated towards that energy and that kindness and openness. And I think that came through whether he was talking one-on-one with you or with a group of 1,000 people in the room. So he was that bigger than life voice and persona and personality for KP. So I, you know, I only knew him for a short time because I came into this leadership role, national role in 2015. So many leaders who have known him for a long time would probably say the same thing. That's what really stood out, is that he was just that approachable, so easy to talk to. That's how I experienced him as a leader and a colleague. And absolutely, you know, what we say inside is he had KP Blue in his veins. And you can also hear that when he talks about the mission and how we absolutely continue to put the patient in the center of all things that we do.
You're truly a magnificent leader, and thank you for sharing some of your thoughts. I know it's always difficult. He was just such an iconic figure and then passed away suddenly a year or two ago. Take a moment now on the last subject of the day, your top three priorities this next 6 to 12 months as leader of Northwest Permanente.
Top three. Well, I would say, you know, with the pandemic and the postponement and delay of many of our procedures and surgeries, it's really triaging and doing the work to make sure that we get caught up to do that for our patients. And, you know, along the way, hardwiring all the innovations we've done during the pandemic in virtual care. So whether that's the video visit in specialty care, which, you know, we now have completed visits in specialty care and primary care as high as 20%. And at one point, our visits were in primary care over 90% virtual, and in specialty care over 80%. So really learning from that and seeing what we can hardwire, because we need to continue to do that, pandemic or not. Things like using title care peripherals, where we can do, you know, you can be where you are right now, Scott, and with that accessory, I can listen to your heart and lungs and, you know, do that kind of virtual care and outreach to our patients when they're in skilled nursing facilities or urgent care. And then our people work, I worry about resilience. And, you know, before pandemic, you know, with physician burnout in the country, 300 to 400 physicians commit suicide every year. You've seen the stories of the stress that the shortage of, and the stress of lack of PPE and testing materials. And so our clinical care teams, our care teams are feeling it. So inside KP, there's all that making sure that we get caught up on the care that we need to provide, as well as continue to provide safe care virtually and otherwise. And then thinking about our people, how do we continually engage them, keep them safe, and promote the practice of resilience across the program. And absolutely externally tying that all together with the social justice and the social health, not just of our people, but the communities, because it is ultimately social health and wealth that leads to greater health outcomes. You know, when we talk about social determinants of health, so literally, you know, I say this many times to our teams, we are in this together, and it's really, as the pandemic, it affects everybody. And that's how it might be a KP Northwest or Northwest Perm priority, but ultimately it has to tie with all the communities across the country, across the world, and how we create social health that ultimately, social health and wealth that ultimately produces health outcomes and begin to continue to eliminate health disparities.
thank you very, very much. Just brilliant thoughts today, Dr. DeConis. What a pleasure to speak with you. Fascinating.
No, thank
it's such
you.
An advantage that Kaiser had gotten so far ahead on some of these issues, the virtual care, the telehealth, and so forth. They were so far ahead of the world on it that when the moment in time came, better prepared than anybody else. And your points in social determinants, health, and wealth are so, so important. I want to thank you for taking the time with us today, Dr. DeConis. Just a pleasure visiting with you.
Thank you, Scott.